Big Billy got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us till this country that we love's undivided.
Yup. You either go to church or you're gonna go to hell. Get a job and work or you're gonna go to jail. I just kinda wish we didn't.
Welcome back. Like why's it gotta be top of the second hour. I was just joking at myself. I couldn't decide on a Memorial Day intro, and so we have the standard bumps. Oh well, but Memorial Day is on my heart and mind, and so hopefully that sentiment will be contagious and we will all talk about these kinds of things. So back to this other piece. This other piece attributed to Carl Jones. Again, I don't know who this Carl Jones is. Which Carl Jones? There's a particular Carl Jones I'm not familiar with, whom I'm not familiar. So this is the SCV Fort Blakely, Sons of Confederate Veterans, Fort Blakely Camp 1864, published back in September 19, 2021. For some reason, I happened upon it, or happened by it, almost instantaneously. That should make you wonder, you know. Especially, I mean, this is during peak COVID, you might say, and I'm less and less inclined to be involved in social media in any way. I think it's bizarre, by the way, that we need to ban certain things to protect the feckless little children that can't protect themselves. I digress again. So this post reads, again, attributed to one Carl Jones, presuming it's the same Carl Jones. When someone says, which I hear frequently, that Robert E. Lee was a traitor, quote unquote, what they've just told you is, I do not understand the term treason as defined by American law. These people seem to think that absolute allegiance to the government is patriotism. That whatever the government says is law, quote unquote, and must be obeyed no matter what. This is not only ignorant, in the extreme, it is dangerous. In the debates which framed and ratified the Constitution, it was decided and agreed to that the general government created by the Constitution was to have only certain specific enumerated powers. These powers were delegated to it by the parties to the compact, the states. Maybe there's a Lysander Spooner conversation. Maybe there's a Patrick Henry conversation there somewhere, but continuing. And listen carefully, because I, you know, there's another observation in all of this. Speaking of, you know, the what I mentioned about Robert E. Lee, the tearing down of the statues, kind of the next chapter in the saga. So it was decided and agreed to that the general government created by the Constitution was to have only certain specific enumerated powers. These powers were delegated to it by the parties to the compact, the states. And we get, you know, Amendments 9 and 10 in the Bill of Rights pretty quickly too, which acknowledge and substantiate this point. Continuing, the role of the general government was to act The role of the general government was to act on behalf of the member states within the realm of only these delegated powers. The government was not given absolute powers, nor was it made the final arbiter of the limitations of its own power. Does this sound familiar? I would say it sounds familiar to me in two ways. It sounds like the same old UN discussion. In fact, it reminds me of Muammar Gaddafi's what I call 9/11 truth speech, September 23rd, 2009, I believe. And we should play that. I think we've only played it once. I mention it from time to time. I wonder how many people actually go and listen for themselves. And, you know, you're not supposed to listen to that, I guarantee you. That, I think, is part of the reason why we came, et cetera, as Hillary said to, was it Greta? I forget who it was. Anyway, as Hillary said. The other thing this reminds me of is R.J. Pistrito's piece over at the Heritage Foundation. Where he talked about the second tenet being a corollary to the first. There may be no combination or function of powers within a single branch, referring to Madison in Federalist 47, who stated the accumulation of all powers, legislative, executive, and judiciary in the same hands may justly be pronounced the very definition of tyranny. And then he goes on to actually cite Gary Lawson in his 1994 piece in the Harvard Law Review titled The Rise and Rise of the Administrative State, where Gary Lawson gives the example of the FTC as just emblematic of the way that independent administrative fourth branch agencies work. That, you know, in this case, the excerpt reads, well, let me just back up. Pistrito writes, the second tenet of separation of powers, the prohibition on combining functions. And what's astonishing today is people actually, again, are convinced because of this reflexive sociology nonsense that has us not believing ourselves. You know, why would I trust myself, who's known myself forever? Maybe I have confirmation bias. I could trust an expert who's never met me, and they definitely know me a lot better than I know myself. It just sounds absurd when you put it properly, I think. So the second tenet of separation of powers, the prohibition on combining functions, Lord Acton had it right. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But you know what? Trust this anyway. Maybe, as Jefferson put it, we found angels to govern men. Angels in the form of kings. The prohibition on combining of functions has fared no better in modern constitutional and administrative law. As Lawson explains, Gary Lawson, the destruction of this principle of separation of powers is perhaps the crowning jewel of the modern administrative and so-called progressive revolution. Remember, you know, R.J. Pistrito opens with that, and to substantiate his claim, we played when I started talking about this way back when, the 2007 CNN YouTube debates with Hillary Clinton saying, you know, when she's asked by one of the YouTubers, are you a liberal? And she says, ah, shoot, I'm a progressive, like the early American 20th century American progressives. Well, that means you're an Alinskyite, Gene Sharp, color revolutionary radical who admires Saul Alinsky, as Hillary does. And, you know, for that matter, Alinsky's book dedicated to the first radical, Lucifer, you're tipping your hand. But who's watching, and who knows how this game is played? Continuing, administrative agencies routinely combine all three governmental functions in the same body and even in the same people within that body, Gary Lawson wrote, as Pistrito quoted. And then Pistrito adds, his example here is the Federal Trade Commission. And this sounds ridiculous, but this is how the administrative agency world works. And if you aren't familiar, you know, you haven't listened to this broadcast for a million years, if you doubt the veracity of using the term administrative fourth branch, and it is a fourth branch, then go back and read the congressional record from 1946 when Senate Bill 7 was passed, which became the Administrative Procedure Act, and listen to Senator Pat McCarran saying, we have created a fourth branch. And in case we're thinking he was being hyperbolic, not literal, he reiterated it several times and said things like, so by the Constitution, we have the executive, legislative, and judicial, and now we have the administrative. On Justia law, there used to be an entire section. I mentioned it a few times in the early days, I guess 15 years ago or so, when we were talking about this, and it seemed like it disappeared relatively quickly after being mentioned. An entire section devoted to the administrative fourth branch. Anyway, continuing. So the role of the general government was to act on behalf of the member. And this, you know, this is no small issue when it gets to the fracturing of the union of several states, the republic, to try to rent a permanent fissure that to this day has not been repaired. So it's no small issue, you know, some 150 years later. Maybe we should play Charlie Daniels again like we did yesterday. The role of the general government was to act on behalf of the member states within the realm of only these delegated powers. Government was not given absolute powers, nor was it made the final arbiter of the limitations of its own power. The story goes, you know, so what's the problem? You know, you have Patrick Henry, I smell a rat kind of thing. There is the potential here for bad things. And the moment that we take our eye off the prize, as Andrew Jackson, for example, admonished in his 1837 farewell address, which everyone, every American should read, that should be required reading at any one of these moments that we pause. The irony, again, not to get distracted, but the irony with these things, I think it's the thing that Mike Rowe talks about with the safety meetings. Safety meetings are actually making people less safe. Why? Because you just go to sleep on it. We have a national holiday on it. And so in a weird sort of way, in a weird Marshall McLuhan-ish sort of way, it completely sort of anesthetizes people to the subject and sanitizes their conscience for a lack of regard and consideration of the thing. It's a weird phenomenon. I've said in the past when these holidays happen, you know, at family gatherings, hey, let's talk about what this is really all about. Maybe there's a, I would argue that with all of these things, there's an exoteric meaning, but there's also an esoteric meaning. You know, to support that claim, and you know, just as sort of an anecdotal reference to what I'm talking about, again, as I mentioned yesterday from Tom Callender's piece over at the Daily Signal, how you can honor the fallen this Memorial Day, he mentions that veterans of foreign wars in particular have been outspoken against the Uniform Monday Holiday Act of 1968, which moved Memorial Day from its traditional date to May 30 to the last Monday in May. And their opposition really centers around the notion that the creation of the three-day weekend has diluted the focus of the day from solemn reflection on and tribute to those who sacrificed their lives in defense of our nation and led to the general public's nonchalant observance of Memorial Day. Let's go party! Let's go water ski. No, we don't do that anymore. Let's go wakeboard. Summer's here. Yeah, well, the idea is, I mean, it can work both ways, but again, we are predisposed to debauchery, as I've said. How do I know? Because every time there's an opportunity, the path of least resistance seems to be so, it's a tractor beam. Don't go to the light. I can't help it. I can't help it. You know? All right, we got to get through this. The role of the general government was to act on behalf of member states within the realm of only these delegated powers. The government was not given absolute powers, nor was it made the final arbiter of the limitations of its own power. Maybe we should play Reagan. What? How did he put it? We have a government. We are a nation with a government, not the other way around. Maybe I can find one of those clips. We could play at least one of those. And, you know, Abraham Lincoln, Gettysburg Address, government of, by, and for the people. So let's talk about, you know, and back to Reagan, the, you know, this idea of that government is beholden to the people, that it has no power except the sovereign people, is still the newest idea in all the long history of man's relation to man, I think is how he put it in 64, Time for Choosing. And that kind of thing. Rather than, oh my goodness, why would you trust yourself? You don't have a white coat. You don't have a fancy white coat in your closet. What do you know? All right. Well, actually, I need to back up. Before I finish this, I got to finish the administrative state reference. Why not? Gary Lawson, in his 1994 Harvard Law Review piece titled The Rise and Rise of the Administrative State. This was 1994. And before that, usually in my mind, I think of James P. Hill's article in the John Marshall Law Review that is an absolute essential companion piece the discussion, the third house of Congress versus the fourth branch of government. What in the world is that? What do you mean third house of Congress? There are only two houses, and there are only three branches. What in the heck does that mean? Watch 60 Minutes piece on Big Pharma and how there are the liaisons, the interlocutors, literally standing between a Big Pharma person and a congressional aide or an agency staffer. And then they can, you know, the two parties can testify in Congress with, you know, CIA type plausible deniability. Oh no, we didn't. Have you ever had conversation with this person or anyone from this office or agency or this, you know, company or whatever? No, Senator, I have not. Because they were talking to a liaison, an intermediary, so they can lie in, you know, plausible deniability. So to finish, I'll finish it when we come back. Stick around, more right after this break.
Hebo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
Welcome back. All right, let's wrap this up, shall we? Enough digressions for Pete's sake. But, you know, in the sake of clarification, let me back up a little bit. Pastrito's The Birth of the Administrative State, Where It Came From and What It Means for Limited Government, over at the Heritage Foundation, published back in 2007, is, again, in my humble estimation, required reading. Yes, Virginia, there is a conspiracy. There is a fourth branch hiding right out in plain sight. Every time this discussion arises, somebody says, "Oh, that's not true." Nobody really denies it because they don't have any idea. It's kind of, as one friend puts it, it's kind of like a calf staring at a new gate. Brr. Does not compute. So, doesn't get much pushback because this is out in the, you know, the Lewis Carroll realm, through the looking glass, down the rabbit hole. Everything, you know, speaking of terms of art, I've had this in mind. Hopefully you will bear with me. You know, when I use the word reflection, when we talk about Memorial Day, I don't mean it in an esoteric Lewis Carroll sort of sense. Progress is actually regress. All right. From Pastrito's The Birth of the Administrative State, all of it all together. For those who hold the Constitution of the United States, the relevant excerpt altogether, that is. For those who hold the Constitution of the United States in high regard and who are concerned about the fate of its principles and our contemporary practice of government, the modern state ought to receive significant attention. The reason for this is that the ideas that gave rise to what is today called the administrative state, quote unquote, the fourth branch, are fundamentally which was codified again by Senator, you know, in the words of Senator Pat McCarran in 1946 on the Senate floor. The reason for this is that the ideas that gave rise to what is today called the administrative state are fundamentally at odds with those that gave rise to our Constitution. In fact, the original, and this is where, you know, the Hillary Clintons, this is the rub. Herein lies the rub when she says I'm a progressive. And she knows that. In fact, the original progressive era architects of the administrative state understood this quite clearly as they made advocacy of this new approach to government an important part of their direct, open, comprehensive attack on the American Constitution. All right, now down to the Gary Lawson excerpt. So Pastrito writes, the second tenet of separation of powers, the prohibition on combining functions, has fared no better in modern constitutional administrative law and administrative law. As Lawson explains, quote, the destruction of this principle of separation of powers is perhaps the crowning jewel of the modern administrative revolution. Administrative agencies routinely combine all three governmental functions in the same body and even in the same people within that body, end quote. Again, for more on that, read James P. Hill's 1986 John Marshall Law Review article, The Third House of Congress versus the Fourth Branch of Government, The Impact of Congressional Committee Staff on Agency Regulatory Decision Making. So, back to Pastrito. He writes, citing Gary Lawson, The Rise and Rise of the Administrative State, Lawson's example here is the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. And so Lawson wrote, the commission, I guess we're headed into a break. I got to finish this. Finish it when we come back. Finish this other thing. Then we'll go to the phones. We'll be sparing in the digressions. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
We are a nation under God, and I believe God intended for us to be free. We must realize that no arsenal or no weapon in the arsenals of the world is so formidable as the will and moral courage of free men and women. The price for this freedom at times has been high, but we have never been unwilling to pay that price. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David. Their lives ended in places called Belleau Wood, the Argonne, Omaha Beach, Salerno, and halfway around the world on Guadalcanal, Tarawa, Porkchop Hill, the Chosin Reservoir, and in 100 rice paddies and jungles of a place called Vietnam. They add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom.
Broken brothers, set us free. So come back.
let's get back to it in the interest of time. So finishing the Heritage, R.J. Prostrito's piece, the reference that Gary Lawson gives in the rise and rise of the administrative state. The commission promulgates substantive rules of conduct. The commission then considers whether to authorize investigations into whether the commission's rules have been violated. This is the, you know, violation of the separation of powers, the second tenet. If the commission authorizes an investigation, the investigation is conducted by the commission. This is literal, by the way. This sounds ridiculous, but this is what happens. If the commission authorizes an investigation, the investigation is conducted by the commission, which reports its findings to the commission. If the commission thinks that the commission's findings warrant an enforcement action, the commission issues a complaint. The commission's complaint that a commission rule has been violated is then prosecuted by, you guessed it, the commission, and adjudicated by the commission. The commission adjudication can either take place before the full commission or before a semi-autonomous administrative law judge. The term, the moniker semi-autonomous is kind of like, you know, climate science, or might as well say COVID science in this case. Dubious. If the commission chooses to adjudicate before an administrative law judge rather than before the commission and the decision is adverse to the commission can appeal to the commission. That is a literal fact, and it sounds ridiculous because it is, but it's the truth. Back to the piece about Robert E. Lee and traitor, treason, all that. The government was not given absolute powers, nor was it made the final arbiter of the limitations of its own power. Article 3 of the Constitution defines treason against the United States as, quote, making war against them, which is capitalized in this post, or giving aid and comfort to their enemies. Again, uppercase, not capitalized, uppercase, excuse me. The United States are, quote unquote, plural. And them, and their, quote-unquote, their as in T-H-E-I-R, not it or its. The union of several states, that is. The seceded states who voluntarily entered the union reserved the right to voluntarily leave it. But that was a cautionary tale. From the very beginning, we heard folks say, you know, hold on, because if you tear it apart, you'll never repair it. It'll never be restored. Several, New York, Rhode Island, and Virginia, specified this in their ratification instruments as a condition of ratification. The condition was accepted and thus made universal to all other parties to the compact, present and future, despite the Lysander Spooner discussion, we may say. Breaking away from this voluntary union was not an act of war. It was an attempt to avert war. It was not an act of revolution, as it did not seek to take forceful control of the government. It was a voluntary act of separation. If, as Lincoln maintained, the states never truly left the Union, then it was Lincoln himself who committed treason by invading these states and, quote, making war against them, end quote. That's what Article 3 says. And, you know, then we could probably insert Patrick Clausen here. How, the traditional way America gets to war. The idea of forcefully holding the Union together by violence and invasion as patriotism, quote unquote, is repulsive to the basis upon which the Union was formed. It implies that the founders regarded the maintenance of government by any means, uppercase, as the foremost concern of that generation, and that liberty was secondary to this forced association. Show me one founder who, during the framing and ratification of the Union, ever suggested such a thing. I'll wait. To the contrary, Alexander Hamilton in New York, in the New York Convention, said that such coercion against a state would be, quote, the maddest project ever devised, end quote, and that no reasonable man could be well disposed toward a government that held itself together by war and carnage. James Madison said to force a state would be correctly regarded as a declaration of war and a dissolution of the Constitution as well as the Union itself. Robert E. Lee did not commit treason, ever. And, there is the show trial, I would say, issue. That's another discussion for another day. So just throwing that out there now. Robert E. Lee did not commit treason, ever. So says this post. To the contrary, he fought a defensive war to uphold the very right to self-government that was guaranteed in both the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution itself. It was Lee who displayed patriotism, quote-unquote, by the defending of these most American of principles. Anyone telling you otherwise does not understand the most elementary of American history and really has no business speaking on the subject. That's an interesting post, again, attributed to one Carl Jones. All right, so that pretty much does it for that, I think, and to the phones. Pat in Texas, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Oh, hi, Chris.
Good morning, Pat.
I found Carl Jones on DuckDuckGo and Conservapedia.
Okay.
I think that it says September 21, 2021. He put it in everything you read about Robert E. Lee, mm-hmm. one of the few cadets. He put all that on Facebook, or somebody did.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess that's who he is, and he's just. I don't know. But anyway, I wanted to tell you that I'm still searching right now if we can stop them from tearing down taking all those monuments and changing all the names to the military bases, which is going to cost us millions and millions of dollars thanks to our new head of the DOD, Austin, but the Senate had to approve it, and that was what I heard last year. So I was busy trying to say, oh, no, it's probably already done, and I wasn't looking. They have something called the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966, and from that is a committee. And I was looking to see who was on the committee and all that stuff. So. But I would like to stop the pay, but we don't have a Senate. See, we don't have a Senate in Washington, but unfortunately. It doesn't make sense if the House says, oh, no, we can't give you money for that. They shouldn't be allowed to do it. Even if they say, yeah, tear them all down and get rid of all of those statues and whatever. The House should say, no, I'm not going to give you the money. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's all I wanted to say. I'll let somebody else say anything. Okay?
I agree entirely. Yeah.
I appreciate everything you're doing. Okay?
Thank you. Thanks, Pat.
You're done doing. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Much appreciated. All right. Back to the phones in the interest of time. Patrick in Texas, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Thanks, Chris.
Morning, sir.
Kevin McDonald, who wrote The Culture of Critique, and he had a very, very in-depth breakdown of all of the people with dirty hands that corrupted the education system and to erase our history. And to summarize, he said, we need to know the history of these people. Just to back off of that, I just kind of open my eyes to that, but Michael Getty talks very, very eloquently about that period of time, the beginning of America, and I'm reading his book, one of his books here he recommended, To the Victors Go, the Myths and the Monuments, and he harps on this Robert Morris, who was basically the treasurer, and he had a bank and very rich and connected. And he took the $20 million in gold from France and repackaged it through his bank. And then it ended up we had to pay back not only France, but we had to pay back his take on the thing. And he also was in charge of the Constitution. Him and Alexander Hamilton just ran that, and it was all by attorneys. So Robert Morris, he completely altered everything that that went into the Constitution, and especially like Jefferson told Alexander Hamilton, necessary and convenient and convenient, the necessary and proper clause is not a convenience clause for you. He schooled him on that. And then there's the supremacy clause, which both of those things, they completely just wiped out the Constitution with the supremacy clause especially. But they're shady, to say the least. And Robert Morris and Hans Solomon and George Washington has got their own statue in Chicago, giving a handshake, a Masonic handshake. They were all Masons. And it was it's been shady all the way. And this guy, another thing is like the New York Tribune was like the New York Times. That is the mouthpiece of like the Rothschild. And the guy that owned that, Horace Greeley, he bailed out Jefferson Davis out of prison, and which is very odd for somebody he wanted to kill. And then Jefferson Davis had this Judah P. Benjamin as his like his running buddy. He was nicknamed Jefferson Davis's pet Jew. And they ripped off the runoff of the Treasury. They sabotaged everything. It just makes perfect sense now that Horace Greeley bailed Jefferson Davis out of prison. It's just a Masonic, it's a club. It's a beautiful job you've done with Lee. Lee was an outstanding individual. So was Patrick Henry. And there's a few others. But, I didn't mean to, to disrupt you, but I really appreciate what you've done with Lee. And that's all I got.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. It's, definitely not in keeping with the sanitized, whitewashed version of history. And so there's that. Back to the phones. Again, in the interest of time, Chris in Virginia, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hey, Chris.
Good morning.
Thanks for talking about that today. In 2020, now live in Richmond, and I had to witness the insanity. Can you hear me okay?
No, just kidding. Yes.
I had to witness the insanity of that whole debacle with the Robert E. Lee statue, and it was very surreal, almost like reading a horror novel, living a horror novel in real life. That was just the tip of the iceberg, but that especially was symbolic. A couple little details you may not know about was that the plot of land that the Robert E. Lee statue stood on, there was some kind of legal instrument involved that was talked about that would limit being able to tear it down, basically some kind of family something legally. Of course, they ignored that. It was in the courts. There were people actually trying to fight for it, a couple of people. And the lawyers' offices, because this is all mob rule, it goes back to this is all witnessing the beginning of mob rule.
Well, the idea, that gets back to the distinction between a democracy and a republic, and what do we mean by mob rule? This gets back to what I've been trying to get to for a million years in Hayek's Road to Serfdom, Chapter 10. In particular, what you do is you weld together a group that's influential, and it becomes the tyrant's majority, as folks like Alan Watt might say.
Right. And we had that mob rule. It was very apparent.
And I think if I could just make the just sort of the nuanced point, you know, that's I think that's what gets missed. People say, what do you mean? It's not a numerical majority. Exactly. That's what Hayek points out. It is a group that is influential enough to change things. And I would say in a balkanizing sort of fashion. Color revolution.
Right, so they don't focus on numbers so much as influential power. But basically, the lawyers' offices that were representing, they had their power cut by the mob.
Interesting.
Yeah, they literally
I think I heard
came
about
the outside
that.
Of the building. They cut the power to them. They threatened to harass them. All of them used violence. Yeah. It was terrible. It was very
and,
heartbreaking.
You know, I mean, we've witnessed things like that, you know, with the truckers deal up in Canada and different things. And those, you know, however staged and contrived all of that may be, one of, I think, the big salient takeaways in those things, you know, like cutting power and things, is those are an act of war.
Right. It's civil war. Well, can I say one more thing, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely.
Another thing was the fact that if you just did a little bit of digging, you could find out that Robert E. Lee wasn't such a bad guy, but everyone just went along with the mob anyway, and that was painful to live through.
Yeah.
But the last thing is I've worked at Lee College, and I've been to that chapel that he built, and it was very moving. I've been in his office. So anyway, that's all I had, sir.
I appreciate it.
Thank
Much
you.
Appreciated.
God bless.
And God bless you as well. When you step back, it seems subtle kind of on the face of it, but, you know, like I've said about the observance of Memorial Day, when you step back and you actually take a closer look, for Memorial Day, there isn't a whole lot. We all should be experts on what Memorial Day, for example, is all about, I think. It is our civic duty or responsibility in a sense, I think. But similarly, the story of, you know, Southern hostility and aggression, I mean, I've talked about what's his name's book? You know, The Secret Terrorists by, what's his name, Bill, anyway, some things he gets wrong, I don't agree with everything, but the idea that this plot was being fomented decades in advance, you know, one of the key moments that he mentions in the book is the celebration at the White House in 1828, 2 years after the passing of Adams and Jefferson, and John C. Calhoun's blustery speech about states' rights. And, you know, that was obviously long before the so-called Civil War. So those forces were stirring. There's much more to say about that. We're coming to the end of the show. Back to the phones, Lynn in Maryland. Thanks for calling. Welcome.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much. First, my heart goes out to Pat in Texas. I'm sorry for the loss of her brother, and I'm glad he's honored on the wall. And thank you for his service. I know we don't like to say that, but
no,
the book you were just talking about
was it's
called
the sacrifice that I don't appreciate. I don't like the term sacrifice. I think it has a dual, you know, esoteric meaning.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're talking about somebody losing their life, thank you for your sacrifice.
I just feel sorry for her loss and her family and the letters. That's heartbreaking. That's heartbreaking. But he knows, you know, he'll get those letters in heaven. The book you were talking about was called The Secret Terrorist, because I was calling in when you were saying it.
Yeah.
So I didn't. Yes. Okay. The other thing I was going to say about Lee's statue, if it's one in Richmond,
Mm-hmm. I think it's his great-grandson actually supported taking down the statue. So the family was also behind it and willing and supported it. But I just cannot imagine Richmond without those statues.
Well, we don't know what the story is behind that. That reminds me of the Kennedy family being divided, you know, publicly on certain things, like when Robert Jr. is outspoken about vaccines and, you know, there's this cherry picking to try to create division in the family, or the King family, for example.
I know.
So I don't know.
I wasn't pointing it out because I go along with it.
Right.
It's just a little piece of history in case somebody didn't know. Because I was a little shocked when it happened.
Sort of a nuanced clarification on that.
Because I know the Lee family. So you know, I don't know them closely, but, you know, I've been to plenty of family gatherings and they're there too. And I just thought, you know, if I wouldn't have said that. You know, that's our history, and be that as it may, but if anybody is ever in Washington and you're near Arlington, the best view anywhere is from the house in Arlington Cemetery, from the Lee House. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. You see all of D.C. It's the most glorious view. So, I mean, well, if you think D.C. is glorious for all its, you know, streets laid out in Pentagon and all the other good stuff, but it's a good view. It's the best view in town. So, thank you, Chris. Thank you. I have to tell you, I was crying my eyes out yesterday. So, you did a great job with that.
There will be more.
Great job with Memorial Day.
Thank you. I intend to do it more tomorrow and Friday.
Oh, good.
So, we'll see.
Everybody I love is buried there. They're just waiting on me. Yeah, and Arlington's been told, don't you dare cremate me. So I'm not betting on they'll get that right either, but be that as it may. Okay, bless your heart. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Lynn.
Okay, bye.
Down to the wire. So speaking of Memorial Day, from General Orders Number 11 issued by John A. Logan himself, May 5, 1868, let us then, at the time appointed, gather around their sacred remains and garland the passionless mounds above them with choicest flowers of springtime. Let us raise above them the dear old flag they saved from dishonor. Let us, in this solemn presence, renew our pledges to aid and assist those whom they have left among us as sacred charges upon the nation's gratitude, the soldiers and sailors, widow and orphan. That'll do it for today's broadcast. I hope it was informative, if not edifying. And as always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.